You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Swing, high fly ball, belt to right center, and the Braves have won it!
They're the new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
A walk-off homer from Freeman, and the Braves win it!
He is! Braves win!
Fair ball, it's a walk-off! Acuña sends us home with a 5-4 victory!
Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of Behind the Braves, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. I'm Ricky Mast, Atlanta Braves digital media content manager, virtually via Zoom, alongside Braves director of alumni relations, Greg McMichael. We are fresh off of our first outing on the golf course together yesterday. Greg is pretty much playing on one leg right now and is still out there looking like he's ready to go on the senior PGA tour. I look like I just picked up a golf club for the first time yesterday morning. Greg, you can't
20 years.
Yep. He's nodding his head. Yes, he's confirming that. We went and had a good time at the Hit 'em for Hemophilia tournament. And Alpharetta yesterday. So thank you for inviting me. I know I didn't help the team. I did go back and look at this. I made a putt. I made one shot. I made a putt. So I can't remember if that was to save par for a birdie, but I made one putt. So I contributed to the team. One shot, maybe, but I did contribute.
That was birdie.
It's a birdie. Okay. Well,
yeah.
I remember it well. Yeah. Well, I do too. I'm remembering that. And I'm going to pretend like some of the other shots never happened. And there you go. So
you weren't that bad. You for not picking up a club and having clubs from 1982. I mean, you were pretty strong, I will say.
My clubs, some they might classify as vintage now. I mean, but, you know, it's funny. My fiance and I, we had a storage unit here. We've got a lot of our stuff stored in there. And the storage unit we had our stuff stored in had a partial like roof collapse and water damage all throughout it. So my old golf bag was ruined. But unfortunately, the clubs were perfectly fine. so I had no.
Let's just say they weren't wooden.
No, they weren't wooden. I wish they would have been. Could have gotten new ones. But anywho, we are in a good mood because, like we've said the last couple of weeks, it's October. It's October 20th as we're sitting here, and the Braves are still playing baseball. And man, that's what it's all about. It's exciting. As we're sitting here, last night was game three of the NLCS at Dodger Stadium. A little bit of a gut punch is the word, but hey, we took a punch. We've been winning for over a week, hadn't lost in a while, and had some pretty incredible wins in that span. So there's a reason we went with battle as our marketing campaign for this postseason. I mean, it's never just going to be easy. It's going to be hard, and it's going to be earned if you make it the whole way. So that was a tough one last night, but still sitting here 2-1, Braves are up 2-1 the series, feeling pretty good about that. And we decided to get one of your old teammates and broadcaster for the Houston Astros. I guess he's on pregame, postgame, that kind of thing.
Yeah. AT&T Fox Sports Southwest for the Houston Astros.
Yes, Mike Stanton, long time. I remember watching him pitch when I was a youngster alongside you in that Braves bullpen for many years. Man, what a career. I mean, played in the big leagues for darn near two decades, right?
So one year shy of 20 seasons.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I feel like anybody that makes it in this game for multiple seasons, five seasons, I think is a heck of a run. A decade is amazing. So to go almost two decades, that shows you A, how good he was, but also B, how hard he had to work to stay in the game that long. So yeah, you and him go back to, let's see, he would have been on the team when you were a rookie in 93. Is that right?
Yeah, 93, 4-5. And then played against him the rest of the time. Yeah, he was a good one. Like you said, I mean, he was an all-star. He has unbelievable, just looking at his postseason numbers. I mean, when you think about how he was in six different World Series, two with the Braves, four with the Yankees, He had a 3-0 with a 1.5 in those World Series games. And then he in 11 straight seasons, he was in the postseason with 5-2 with a 2.1 ERA. And that's over 55 innings he had just in postseason play. I mean, that's just amazing when you really think about a career. I mean, that's a career in and of itself. No, I don't. There's not many guys that can boast of that kind of, you know, that kind of record, that kind of longevity just in the postseason. And, you know, there's something to be said for guys who do well in the postseason. I talk about job security. I mean, guys like a Jock Peterson, who when nobody else is playing, all the GMs are looking and you're performing well, that makes them want to sign you right after the World Series. So guys like Mike, who had great postseason careers, GMs are watching. All the teams are watching. You know, during the season, not everybody, maybe the scouts are watching you, but in the postseason, all the GMs, I guarantee, are watching these guys. They're like, oh, I like the way this guy pitches. I like the way this guy hits. He's a gamer. I think I might want to sign him for next year, because as soon as the World Series is over, they start signing guys, right?
Right. And 11 straight years in the postseason with four different teams. And that streak started when there were a lot less teams that even made the postseason. And so to go from club to club to club to club and still be each of those clubs be a contender and make the postseason every year, that does tell you, well, that speaks to exactly what you were just saying there, that GMs would see him pitch in the postseason and they would say, I've got to get that guy in my bullpen or on my staff next year. So really, really interesting conversation with him. You can tell that he is definitely a pro broadcaster because how easily he's able to just break things down and, well, just discuss what's happening right now. We're hoping, as we kind of said at the end of the interview there, we're hoping to go get to see him in person next week, or if we go to Boston, that's fine too. I'm not picky. Either one sounds lovely this time of year, but it'd be cool if we manage to make it past this round, it'd be cool to see Mike in Houston. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get right to it then. Without further ado, here he is, Mike Stanton.
And that's the case as Sid Bream makes the catch. Mike Stanton and the Atlanta Braves will head home for game six.
Well, hey, Mike, thanks so much for joining us on Behind the Braves. I wrote you on my board probably about 2 months ago, like, hey, we got to get Mike on. I was telling Ricky about you. We were former teammates. We played in the early to mid 90s with the Braves. And I said, Mike's been in broadcasting. And then especially with Houston coming on, I said, man, we got to get him on there. So I had you marked down for a while. I'm glad we finally connected. And so we appreciate you hanging out with us a little bit today.
Yeah, no problem at all. Yeah, it's been a long time since you and I have had a chance to catch up. You know, I'm obviously an alumni of the Braves, so I get all your emails and everything, but we just haven't got to be, you know, live and in person together. So it's good to good to speak with you again.
That's right. Well, good deal. Well, I know you've done some good work with the Astros, even though it's the Astros. I'm always proud of our alumni that are still in the game. I mean, I think about guys like Ronnie Gant, Mark Grant, and, you know, we get the guys here, Frank Coor and Brian Jordan. So a ton of guys, Peter Moylan, Nick Green, that are all involved in broadcasting. I love it because it seems like we have, and of course, Smoltz and Glab, we got more guys than anybody that are still in the game. And so in all aspects, so it's always, I'm always proud to say, oh yeah, that guy, he's one of our alumni and he's doing really well. And So I did want to ask you a little bit about just what was the transition like for you going from, I mean, my gosh, you played forever. It seemed like, I can't believe, I look back at your numbers and how you played. I definitely want to get into the postseason on how well you did in the postseason, but I would like just to tell the audience, because this has kind of been a theme, a lot of the things that we've done on the podcast, talking about alumni who transitioned well and what you did from your post, you know, from your playing career, and then you jumped right in and you've been broadcasting for a while. Tell us a little bit about how that went for you and what was the process like?
Well, it really wasn't something, I mean, I had always thought that I might enjoy broadcasting after I was done playing, but it wasn't something that I really pursued really hard. Actually, to tell you the truth, the first thing I did as soon as I stopped playing was I started coaching. And I coached at Don Bosco Prep up in New Jersey. My son was going there. I coached there for a couple of years. And then we decided to move back down here to Texas. And once I got down here, the first thing I did was, well, more coaching. got into private coaching, ended up opening a facility down here with Chad Fox, another Braves alumni. And, you know, I've kind of been involved in that aspect, you know, private coaching, really since I retired, since about 2010. So it was easy transition, especially, you know, the last few years of my career. I kind of viewed myself as a player coach anyways. You know, I really tried to mentor the younger players. You know, I even had a little spiel that I would give young players that came up from the minor leagues to help them transition, you know, deal with the extra deck on the stadium, deal with the extra pressure and not be, you know, when I came up, some of the guys were pretty hard on us. You know, you were a little bit after I was, but you know, there was an old guard that was taking care of Major League Baseball at the time. And there was some hazing and nothing serious or anything like that. But, you know, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to take a different route because I knew a lot of times those young players were going to be the players that would help us win. And that was the one thing that always drove me was that will to win and kind of do anything that I needed to do to help the team win and collect rings.
Well, you were a great competitor. And of course, you know, I remember you well because you had some great years when I was in the minor leagues. Your first, you know, I guess you came up and were you drafted in 87? You came up in 89. Right. Yeah, so you were part of the great Braves runs from the last to first team to Sid Slid team and then on into, you know, even our World Series team. You got traded in the middle of the year, but you were still a big part of that. And the 93, we had a great team. So, but what's amazing for you, that never changed. I mean, you continue to be on those great Yankee teams. And I mean, I just, when I look back, I'm thinking, gosh, all the World Series you played in, all the season. You just had great numbers, and I'll just throw one. I mean, you were 3-0 with a 1-5 in just all the World Series games. You pitched in 6 different World Series, so I'm sure that was a great help to a lot of those players. But one thing when I think about you, I think about obviously you were so durable. You were a left-handed pitcher. You threw hard, and then you kind of continued to reinvent yourself. I mean, nobody pitches for that long, right? Nobody pitches for that long without having to come up with more and more pitches and then just executing. So I admire you for all that you did there. But talk a little bit about, as we're in the postseason now, and you look at these great series, whether it's Boston at Houston or whether it's the Braves and the Dodgers, what do you see? Let's talk about the Astros series first. What do you think the turning point for those guys? What's the major point that's going to happen for the Astros to bring it home?
Well, I think for any team right now, and it is so different than when, you know, you and I played together, even you go all the way back to, you know, the last years I made the playoffs was 2002. I mean, it's just so incredibly different now. Now there is almost no emphasis at all on starting pitching. And, you know, the Braves teams that we played on, that was the main emphasis was starting pitching. And now, I mean, you're seeing if you get a starting pitcher that goes 5 innings in a playoff game now, they pitched great. They did an outstanding job. And I'm like, what? It's only 5 innings. It's not even a quality start. And you remember Leo Mazzoni used to complain when they moved a quality start from 7 innings and 3 runs to 6 innings and 3 runs. Just tell you the truth, 3 runs in 6 innings, that's a 4.5 ERA. That is like the definition of mediocre. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what we have now with the analytics and not letting these pitchers go through the lineup, well, heck, not the third time, sometimes not even the second time, you know, this emphasis on the relievers. And I've been saying this, you know, for years now, since we've been going through this, that it doesn't matter how good your stuff is. Every pitcher can suffer from overexposure. And that's why I think, you know, both of these series that are going on right now, you can't critique them. You have no idea what's going to happen because you really have no idea what the bullpens are going to look like in a game 6 or game 7.
Yeah, that's right. That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, we're sitting here, we're taping this at 3 o'clock Eastern time, and we still, we know that the Braves have a bullpen game tonight, but right. we still don't know who's actually starting it. So,
so this will be the second one during that series. You got to, the Dodgers did it in game one. How about that? How about they didn't have a starting pitcher to throw. Then in game two, they go to a 37-year-old right-hander in Max Scherzer and on short rest. And it's just incredible how these teams, and this is all teams, this is across the board in Major League Baseball. Mm. Some are a little bit better than others, but I mean, it's just amazing that, you know, the starting pitchers, I mean, it's almost a side note who's actually starting the game.
Yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, I think the Dodgers are going to throw another bullpen game tomorrow. If
Very well could be.
Right. Yeah. So a lot of times, kind of how we approach, Greg and I approach things on this show, people who have listened to us know that I grew up a Braves fan, so I watched you guys in the 90s on TBS and all that, and that was what sparked my love for the game and this team. But we usually take things from Greg as a former player, has his perspective and his questions, and then I, from the fan side, I have my questions. So I'm just curious, and you, this is for both of you, pitching in the postseason versus the regular season, internally, do you feel more pressure? Is there any difference, or is it still just feel the same to you when you go out there on the mound?
It's not the same. And I don't want to say it's pressure, because I've always felt, even back when Greg and I were playing together, pressure was something that was self-imposed. A situation doesn't put pressure on you unless you elect to feel that pressure. But, you know, I was a max effort, really aggressive guy. So I had to spend a lot of the postseason, well, even regular season, I had to spend a lot of the time kind of pulling back on the reins, trying to keep my emotions in check, because I was, you know, I kind of pitched with like a linebacker football mentality. You know, I was going to go as hard as I could, as long as I could. And that was something that I, you know, I got better at, obviously, as the fastball velocity came down. You know, Greg was talking about how you reinvent yourself. You throw a couple extra pitches, or you come up with a new pitch, which I did after about 11 or 12 years in the game. I came up with a split finger fastball, you know, just trying to get better. You know, that's one of the things, we always try and do is, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And whether it's your command, whether it's your mechanics, whether it's your mentality, or coming up with a new pitch, we're always tinkering, always trying to find something to help us get hitters out and help us become better baseball players. So, but pitching in the postseason, the really incredible thing, you know, I was blessed to pitch in 11 straight postseasons. Now, I did that with four different baseball clubs. So, you know, it's a little different than, you know, guys like Glavin, who did it all with the Braves. You know, so it was, each year is different though. You know, some years you go in, you're throwing the ball well, you're really aggressive, you're throwing strikes. When you make a mistake, they don't hit. And then there's other times that you're not throwing the ball as well. Or maybe I didn't pull back on the reins quite enough, and I would get too emotional and get, you know, going too fast. And, you know, it's just something, every pitcher is so different. But I was always a guy that, you know, I really couldn't be more aggressive than I really was. And there were times I would actually get too far and things would kind of get out of control. But that was my mentality. And I know other players that, you know, were much better at it, or even had completely different approach. But, you know, the whole idea of pitching in the postseason, I really tried to just belittle the whole situation. And what I mean by that is, you know, hey, you still got to throw the ball, you still got to catch the ball, you still got to hit the ball. And, you know, my job was to go execute a pitch. It didn't matter if I was pitching in spring training or pitching in the seventh game of the World Series. My job never changed. And that was one of the things that really helped keep me grounded and keep me focused on what my real job was to do.
Yeah, that's a great point. I've told people in the past that a lot of the playoff atmosphere is about, you go from maybe talking to three or four media people to you know, constantly signing all the baseballs, and you've got all the hoopla surrounding it, right? There's a lot of things.
Brain tears prior to the 94 strike. I mean, we were signing literally over 100 dozen baseballs. And I can remember one of the years we went down 2-0 in the World Series. And then everybody's scrambling to get these balls signed in case it was a sweep, you know, because you want to make sure you got the ball signed. Now, as far as the media is concerned, you know, Atlanta was okay, but they're kind of soft in Atlanta. They're soft here in Houston. You need to go into the playoffs in New York. That's a little That's different right. situation.
That's right. I still laugh. I tell people that, you know, it was crazy when we remember we lost in Philadelphia in 93. They beat us and they still were rocking our bus after the game. Right. Yeah. And then in New York, at least was smart enough to put horses around our bus because the fans would probably have done the same thing.
Right. Thank you, Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I know you pay close attention to everything that's going on, and you probably know that the Astros team a lot better than you know the Braves team. But when you look at that Astros team, it looks like that series is pretty neck and neck. You feel pretty good about the Astros being going to the next level?
Well, you do now than before the game last night. And I think that because the Astros lost in such spectacular form in game two and game three, giving up three grand slams and just ridiculous number of runs early in the game, and the game's being out of hand really almost before it got started, I think people, especially fans, they get so emotional about it. They thought the series was over. And you're like, well, hold on. It's still only, you're still only down 2-1. And I'll tell you what, their bullpen did an amazing job last night holding down a offense that is about as hot as you could possibly get in the Boston Red Sox. So, you know, it's like, again, it's hard to critique what's going to happen, you know, with Chris Sale going tonight against Jose Urquidy. You know, the Astros have handled Chris Sale pretty easily, like his last four starts. And you also don't know how far Chris Sale can go because he's basically still in spring training right now. Jose Urquidy should be much better. He didn't pitch for like 3 weeks. And this is a guy that usually has a real, even he's only 25 years old, has a real feel of how to move the ball around, how to read swings. He got a little tentative in that second inning. So I wouldn't expect him to do that again. But like I said, the state of both bullpens is absolute disaster. Everybody has pitched too much, and you're only halfway through the series. So who knows? Do they have a chance? Of course they do. I mean, they're a very, very good team. But you know what? The Red Sox are also just like the two teams in the National League.
Yeah, and I've said this from the beginning. When you have home field advantage, that's really the biggest thing that you could probably do. Astros got to go back, play two at home. Right. The Braves get to come back, play two at home. But, it seems to be a toss-up. Of course, you know, this morning on talk radio, the Braves fans were like, everybody's panicking, and we're up 2-1. Right. That's playoff baseball for you right there.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard what Charlie Steiner said, the radio voice of the Dodgers.
Oh, okay.
He said, you know, because you got to remember, the Braves have, you know, they won the first two games, and they were winning game three up until the very, very end for the first eight innings or seven innings, they were winning that game. So they've been winning most of the time. Yeah, they lost in rather spectacular form also. But Charlie Steiner said that the momentum had switched so much that he actually feels that the Dodgers are up 1-2. I'm like, Charlie, you might be overstating just a little bit, but the whole point.
That sounds like somebody from California.
That sounds like somebody that was a homer. That's definitely
That's right.
there are some writers from the LA Times that are treating the series as if the Dodgers are up 1-2 as well, but I won't go too far down that road. Well, talking about the game last night, Luke Jackson, who's just been, I mean, he's been lights out for the Braves all year. I work on the social media side of things, and I have to say, after a loss like that, a lot of times I just close the computer, shut off the phone for a little bit, let things calm down. And I was kind of a little worried about opening it up this morning, but it warmed my heart to see most Braves fans were out there defending Luke and appreciating what he's done all year. And even Luke himself said, if he had to do over again, he would probably still make that same pitch because it was the pitch he wanted to make. And Bellinger got it. But what I wanted to ask you both, because you're relief pitchers and you pitched a lot in the postseason, is when an outing doesn't go well or doesn't go your way, is your mentality, I want to get back out there the next day as soon as possible? Generally speaking, is that kind of mentality?
Oh, absolutely. 100. Last thing you want to do is sit and think about it. And I'll tell you what, most managers, and Bobby was always very good about this, get the guy back out there. Now in the postseason, it's a little different because, you know, you can't really worry about a reliever's, you know, psychological effect of what happened yesterday, because you just got to win baseball games. But Bobby was always very good about just getting the relievers back out there as quick as possible to get that last thought out of your mind. And, you know, I don't think there's any doubt that Luke threw the pitch he wanted to. And I don't usually question pitch selection. I'm more of a pitch execution guy. But I think he kind of got baited by the pitch prior to the home run when he threw a fastball right down the middle and Cody Bellinger missed it by 3 inches underneath. And I think he said, okay, well, I think I can go fastball top of the zone. That's what he did. And I'll tell you what, that was the best swing I've seen Cody Bellinger make in probably 2 years. I mean, he never gives in. He's got this big uppercut swing. He's always trying to hit the ball to San Francisco. And it's, you know, it's just his approach. And, you know, he beat him on that pitch because he executed the pitch. The problem is, I think it's pretty easy to figure out what the book has been on Cody Bellinger, which is we're just going to break and ball him to death. The Giants did it. Logan Webb, you knew the curveball was coming. He knew the curveball was coming, and he never came off of the fastball. And so I don't think Bellinger did it on purpose. I think he sold out that he was going to go to the top of the zone, and he just beat him to the point. But the scouting report before that was breaking ball, breaking ball, breaking ball, because Cody just can't really get to it, especially if it's down below the zone. He's always going to swing at it. So, you know, Luke executed the pitch he wanted to execute. I just question if that was actually the right pitch selection in a situation that if he throws a breaking ball inside the two batter's boxes, Bellinger was swinging.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and we're not in the position that we're in without Luke Jackson. I mean, Luke has been the go-to guy. You know, Mike, you know as well as I do, you got to have multiple setup men to be successful, even more important than when you and I were pitching.
Yeah.
I mean, we only needed two or three guys. Now you need six guys to be able to pitch throughout a season and be successful. So, you know, Matzik's been the left-handed guy. Luke's been the right-handed guy in the seventh, eighth inning, and then, you know, Will Smith in the ninth. So Luke has had his best year. He could have easily been an all-star.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's the guy that's going to go back out there again in the eighth inning. I mean, there's no question about it, Brian's not going to have any problem with
putting it back in the game.
No.
I mean, Luke, he's a big reason why they're right there. And, you know, hey, we got beat. Sometimes, you know, that's the nature of being a short reliever. You know, sometimes you get the bear. Sometimes the bear gets you.
That's right. And Luke is, fortunately, I think Luke's probably – you know, this is his fourth season, I believe. Is that right, Ricky? I think he's been 4 years and he's kind of come into his own. And I think he's probably pretty good of having short-term memory loss like it is for a good reliever. So I don't anticipate there being any lingering effects with Luke. The only time he gets in trouble is when he gets behind. And you know what? He was ahead of everybody last night. And it seems like that for most of the year, he's done a pretty good job. So it'll be fun to watch. And no matter which series you're interested in, it's all going to be good baseball, right? It's good theater.
Right. That's it. Live drama. That's what we're looking for.
That's right.
That's why this time of year, even when I cover the Astros, even some of the other teams that I played for that I quietly root for, I want every game to go seven games because, you know, you have one more series after that, and then we don't have baseball for 5 months. So I want as many games as we can possibly get.
That's right.
my heart would much rather we just have two more. My heart can only take so much, but I'm with you.
I can sympathize.
If it ends up going game seven or whatever, like it's – after it's over, you can look back even on the fan side and just be like, man, what a ride. That was pretty amazing. So yeah. I will be retroactively with you after these series are over and my heart yeah. calm down.
That's right. Well, hey, Mike, I appreciate you joining us today. We love the Braves, and I know you've got a soft spot for them since you played here. And please tell Debbie I said hello from Jennifer and I, and you guys, great catching up with you. Hopefully it won't be so long the next time we do it, okay?
Yeah, anytime, guys, just let me know. We can get into things a little bit deeper.
All right, sounds good. Maybe when we come to Houston next, maybe Rick and I'll make it out there.
Maybe we'll come to Houston next week. Just putting that out in the universe.
Oh, hey.
There you go. That would be good. All right, buddy. You have a good week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Our thanks again to former Braves pitcher, current Astros broadcaster Mike Stanton for joining us here on Behind the Braves. Well, we've got two more games as we're sitting here recording this. We've got two more games in LA at Dodger Stadium. So if you're in the Atlanta area and you want to come out and hang out with some fellow Braves fans and watch those two games, come on out to the Battery. We've been having a lot of fun with these watch parties out here in the plaza just outside Truist Park, starting with the series in Milwaukee and carrying on through this current series for the Dodgers. So come on out tonight. Come on out tomorrow night. Hopefully these are the last two we play before making the World Series. We'll see how it goes. But for sure, we will have watch parties for tonight and tomorrow night. And those are a whole lot of fun. I think you and your wife were out here for some of them so far. Greg, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. We love the watch parties. They're just a lot of fun, hanging out with everybody, grabbing some Antico's pizza, putting our lawn chairs out there and watching on the big screen, the Braves activate, you know, we're activating the whole plaza there and got some Mark Owens is out and, bloopers out there. So it's a lot of fun. We've had a great time.
Awesome. Yeah. Blooper and Mark Owens both always bring the energy 100% all day, every day.
For sure.
So, yeah. They're good hosts for the party. That's for sure. So Greg Mize and I, my boss, Greg Mize and I, we've been going with the Terrapin Wings here for our while. We've been working the away games here at the watch parties, but I'm thinking tonight we're going to switch it up and go with Antico. That's sounding pretty good.
There you go.
All right.
Can't lose.
That's right. Come on out to the Battery. Cheer for the Braves here with a bunch of your other fellow Braves fans, and you'll have a good time. Promise that. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we're going to see the Braves clinch another trip to the World Series here within the next 48 hours. So looking forward to it. Thanks again to Mike Stanton. For Greg McMichael, I'm Ricky Mast. We'll see you next week on Behind the Braves. Hey, Braves Country, we just wanted to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe Behind the Braves on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or at braves.com/behindthebraves, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on Behind the Braves.